We're on Daf Nun Beis Amud Beis, and we're looking at the Gemara about 13 lines down from the top, starting with the two dots. Beit Shammai Omri Mekaneach V'chulu. So let's go back to the Mishnah for a moment on Daf Nun Aleph Amud Beis, and the Mishnah records a machlokas between Beis Hillel Beit Shammai about Kinuach Yodayim. And this you'll see on the fourth line in the Mishnah, on Daf Nun Aleph Amud Beis, at the beginning of this, the eighth perek. Beit Shammai Omrim Mekaneach Yodav B'mapa. When a person wipes his hand after Netilas Yodayim for pas, for a suda, he should wipe his hands in a napkin. U'meinich al ha-shulchan. It should be placed on the table. U'beisil omrim al ha-keses. He should place the wet napkin that has a little bit of moisture in it from his wet hands that he dried on this napkin on the cushion on which he reclines. So that now, Beis Hillel are not excited about putting this wet napkin on the table, and Beit Shammai are not excited about putting this wet napkin that he used to dry his hands on the recliner, on the cushion. So now we look at the Gemara here on Daf Nun Beis Amud Beis. The Gemara says the following. Tana Rabbanan. This brisa will elaborate on the machlokes between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai about where he puts the mapa that he used to wipe his hands, whether he should put it on the shulchan according to Beit Shammai, or on the keses, on the cushion according to Beis Hillel. Beit Shammai Omrim Mekaneach Yodov B'mapa. After he dries his hands on the napkin, Meinicha Ala Shulchan. Why? She'imata Omer Ala Keses. Because if you would advocate that he place the napkin on the cushion on which he reclines, now we have to understand that the cushion itself is a Rishon Lutuma, or possibly a Sheni Lutuma, and that's not a problem. Nobody questions that the status of the Keses might be that of a Rishon or a Sheni Lutuma. But here's where Beis Hillel are concerned. Gzera Shemitamu Mashkin Shebemapa Machmas HaKeses. Since the napkin now has some liquids in it, let's call it Tofeach al Menas Lat Piach. We had a whole sugya back on Daf Chof Hey about what's considered enough dampness to be classified as a liquid. Let's assume that the napkin is wet and it has enough wetness to be considered a mashke. And now, since the keses has the status of a Rishon or even a Sheni Lutuma, that is not, it's going to be Metami the Mashkim and make the Mashkin in a Rishon Lutuma, as we discussed in the last Shia, that the unique status of Mashkin is that the Mashkin, instead of going down in a level of Tuma, goes up in the level of Tuma. So from a Sheni conveying Tuma over to a Mashkin, the Mashkin is upgraded to the status of a Rishon. And once the Mashkin is a Rishon Lutuma, then it could be mitame his yodayim, because as we said, a rishon in the case of a liquid is now going to be mitame his yodayim, and we want to make sure there's yodayim atahoros. That's why he did netila. But now it's gonna. If you put the napkin on the keses on the cushion, then what's going to happen is the liquids in the napkin are now going to become a rishon lutuma that's going to convey tuma to his yodayim. And that's not good, because the whole purpose here was to get rid of the status of the Yadayim Eshnius Lutuma. That's what he says, V'yachzeru V'yatamu Esa Yadayim, that the liquids, the mashkel element on the napkin is now going to convey Tuma over to his Yadayim. And we know that, when a person, wipes his hands with a napkin during the course of the meal, then the moisture of the napkin, which is now a Rishon Lutuma, will transmit Tuma to his Yadayim. and that will undermine the entire Netilas Yadayim process, that we require that the Yadayim Shniyos have to be Tahoros, Netulos, through Netilas Yadayim. So the Gemara now interjects in the middle of this brisa and asks the following question: Unetame keses lamapa? Why does Beit Shammai have to be concerned about the liquid in the napkin that's going to be metame his yadayim? What about the keses itself? The keses itself is a rishon or a sheni lituma, and that itself should be metame regardless of the mayim. Should be metame his yadayim regardless of whether his yadayim are whether the napkin is wet or not wet. And the whole concern of Beit Shammai is that the napkin is going to receive tumah from the cushion. Because the napkin is wet, why isn't Beit Shammai concerned with the napkin contracting tumah from the keses? Even if the napkin were completely dry, it wasn't tofech al menas lepiach. So I don't have to introduce the mashkin element of the napkin to explain why the napkin is going to be tamei. Now again, the Gemara is assuming now that a kli, let's say the cushion has the status of a kli, and that could convey tumah onto the napkin itself. And therefore, even if you place a dry napkin on the cushion, the dry napkin becomes tame, and that's going to be metame. That's going to be metame is yodayim. So the Gemara asks, why are Beit Shammai concerned about a napkin on the cushion? Because the napkin is wet. Forget it. Even a dry napkin will contract tumah from the keses. Now, really, the Ritva asks a basic question here. Even if the Gemara understands at this point that the keses can transmit tumah to the napkin, which Gemara is going to reject in just a second, but even according to this Havamina, what would be the status of the napkin? It would be a sheni l'tumah. Now, we have a principle that sheni l'tumah is not metami chulin. A sheni l'tumah is only metami truma or hegdesh. So the Ritva discusses this question. In any event, the Gemara's answer is ein kli metame kli. That a kli cannot be metame a kli. A kli could only contract tumah from an avat tumah, or shall we say from perhaps a rishon tumah. But let's assume, even if I grant you that the keses is a rishon l'tumah, cannot be metame a kli, because ein kli metame kli. Now the underlying premise of the Gemara when it says ein kli metame kli is that the keses is certainly not an av hatumah. If the keses in this case were an av hatumah, then it would be metame kelim. An av hatumah is metame adam kelim, but we're not choshish that the keses has a din of an avatumah. There could be a case of a zav who reclines on a keses in a way that the keses would become an avatumah, but that's not what we're choshish for. So we're assuming that in the worst case scenario, the keses might be a rishon l'tumah, and a rishon l'tumah is not metame adam v'kelim. Now, you might want to know if we can isolate the yadayim, that maybe the yadayim could be metame, could become tame from the tumas hakeses. And here we have to assume that he'll be careful about his yadayim and he won't come in contact with the keses. In any event, just to summarize, we have the shita Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai are worried about the wetness, the liquid element on this napkin, and the keses now will convey tuma to that liquid, making it into a rishon l'tuma, and that rishon l'tuma be mitame yadayim. If there was no liquid element, wetness in the mapa, then Beit Shammai would have no problem, because ein kli mitame kli. Now the Gemara asks another question. Vinitame keses legavra gufe. Okay, you're telling me that the keses could not convey tuma to the mapa because ain kli mitame kli, but let the keses, if it's tame, be mitame the gavra himself, who reclines on the keses directly. This would be a direct tuma from the keses to the person, which would mean that his whole body is tame, including his yadayim, and that can't be acceptable. So the Gemara answers, ain kli mitame adam, to the same extent that a kli cannot be mitame a kli cannot be mitame an adam. Only an ava tuma can be mitame kelim vi adam a kelim. So again, although the yadayim themselves would be able to contract tuma from a rishon, which is a tuma d'rabbanon, as we said before, he's going to be careful to avoid touching the cushion with his hands, in case the cushion is a rishon l'tuma, and a rishon l'tuma could convey to yadayim the status of sheni l'tuma. So that's not a problem with yadayim, because he's careful about yadayim. As far as his body is concerned, then we apply the principle that a keli is not metame adam. And again, just as we said earlier, there is a possibility that the keses of a zav, for example, moshav azav, midras azav, could become an avatuma. However, any person who's eating at this table and he wants to make sure that he doesn't contract tuma, he's going to make sure that this keses, this kushar, was not used as a bed by a zav, that he can be careful about. So that finishes Beit Shammai. Now we're up to Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel, if you remember, prefer that after he wipes his hand with this mapa, he put the mapa on the shulchan rather than on the keses. Beis Hillel omrim ala keses, which means that after he wipes his hand in the napkin, and we have the mashkin on the napkin, he should place it on the keses and not on the shulchan. We said that Beit Shammai avoided putting the mapa on the keses, because the keses would convey tuma to the mashkin on the napkin. And now we have to ask the question, why Beis Hillel are okay with placing the napkin on the keses, but they object to Beit Shammai, who placed the keses on the shulchan? So the Gemara answers, Gzeira, according to Beis Hillel, we have a Gzeira Shem Yitamu Mashkin Shem Mata Machmas HaShulchan. The shulchan itself might be Tameh, and therefore the Tumah of the shulchan will be conveyed to the mashkin on the mapa, and the mashkin now become a rishon l'tuma that would be mitame him. What's the drawback? What's the real super fear of Beis Hillel against Beit Shammai in terms of putting the mapa on the shulchan? Now we have a more fundamental problem. The yachzuru v'yitamu es ha'ochlim. So when we have the wet mapa on the shulchan, and there's food on the shulchan, then what's going to happen is the food itself might contract tuma from the liquid in the napkin, right? The liquid in the napkin was nitma; it contracted tuma from the shulchan, and now we have to be afraid that the food itself will come in contact with the food on, in other words, the food on the table will come in contact with the liquid in the napkin. The liquid is now a rishon l'tuma, and a rishon l'tuma is metame ochlin u'mashkin. Right? We said that a sheni l'tuma is not metame chulin, but a rishon l'tuma is metame ochlin. So Beis Hillel is worried about something more fundamental, and that's tumas ochlin. Again, the Gemara is going to have to analyze why is tumas ochlin more of a problem than tumas yadayim, right? Because we were afraid in the case of keses that the liquid in the mapa would contract tuma, become a rishon l'tuma, and then convey tuma to his yadayim. Beis Hillel finds it more unacceptable when you put the mapa on the shulchan, because you might be metami through these liquids ochlin. Why is ochlin more of a problem? We'll get to that in just a minute. So Gemara now asks Akasha, will etami shulchan li ochlin shebetocho? Any ochel that might come in contact with the shulchan, that itself should be a problem. You're worried about tumas ochlin here. Well, forget about the mapa. Just the very fact that the shulchan itself is tamei, that should be a problem of conveying the tumah from the shulchan to the ochlin. So again, since the table itself is tamei, then what are you going to do? You're going to place the mapa onto the keses, onto the cushion, according to Beis Hillel. But forget about the mat. You still have a more basic problem in that the shulchan will transmit directly tuma to the ochlin. So the Gemara answers, Hacha b'shulchan sheni askin, and the status of the shulchan is not a rishon l'tuma, but that of a sheni l'tuma. And then we activate the principle that we discussed in the previous shia, ein sheni ose shlishi chulin. The sheni does not have the power to transfer its tumah over to a shlishi if the shlishi is chulin. The only exception to that is truma and hegdesh. El al yedei mashkin, only if the mashkin becomes a rishon l'tuma, then the rishon l'tuma could transmit tuma to chulin. And in this case, since the napkin is on the shulchan is the sheni l'tuma, then the mashkin in the napkin, after he washed his hands in the mashkin, will now contract tuma of the level of a rishon l'tuma from the shulchan, which is a sheni l'tuma. And then what's going to happen is those mashkim as a rishon l'tuma will transmit tuma over to the ochlin that are on the table. So the Gemara now explains the machlokas. So again, before we get to B'mai Kor Miflegi, let's just point out again that the Sheni L'tuma, which in this case the Shulchan has the status of a Sheni L'tuma, transmits Tuma to a Mashke and makes the Mashke into a Rishon L'tuma. And if the Mashke now becomes a Rishon L'tuma, then it could be Metame Ochlin. And therefore the Ochlin on the table now will be Tmeim. However, when we say that a sheni cannot transmit tuma to chulin, that's true, but without the discussion of mashkin. So if you're talking about the table transmitting tuma to the chulin, to the ochlin on the table, that's not going to happen, because the sheni, the shulchan is a sheni, it's not metame chulin. But if you're talking about the medium here, the liquids on the mapa, that's already a conduit, because the liquids have the status of a rishon, and the rishon will now transmit tuma over to the food on the table and make it into a sheni l'tuma. So Gemara says, "But my kav miflegi, what's the yisod here of the machlokas between Beis Hillel Beit Shammai? Beit Shammai savri osel ishtamish b'shulchan sheni." It's very similar to the discussion that we had earlier about a kus, whether a kus tome would be allowed on the table during the Suda, according to Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai prohibited it because the nitzotzos that go on the outside of the kli will become a rishon l'tuma that's going to transmit tuma over to your dayan. Now we're saying a little bit similar, that Beit Shammai will absolutely forbid the use of a shulchan, even if the shulchan is only a sheni l'tuma. And this is for another reason, an entirely different reason, and that's because of Ochlei Truma. Let's say you have a Kohen who's eating Truma on the Shulchan. And we said that although a Sheni is not Metame Ochlin or Mashkin of Chulin, it would be Metame Truma. So a Sheni is Metame Truma. And if a Kohen is going to be eating Truma on this table, and the table is a Sheni Lutuma, that's not good, because the Sheni Lutuma can transmit its Tuma to Truma, make the Truma into a Shlishi Lutuma, and you're going to have to, and then you'll passel the Truma. Again, you have to know whether you burn the Truma, that's a different question. But certainly the Truma becomes Truma Psula, Truma Tmea. So there's no question, according to Beit Shammai, that you're not allowed to allow, you cannot permit a Kohen to eat Truma on a Shulchan that has the status of a Sheni Lutuma, which would render the Truma a Shlishi Lutuma. So therefore, we have to make a Gzera. And we're never going to allow anyone, even a non-Kohen who's eating Chulin, to eat off a table that's a Sheni Lutuma. Because what's going to happen is that the Kohen might come to eat Truma on a table that's a Sheni Lutuma. Because if Yenim, the non-Kohen, the Tzar, is allowed to eat on a Shulchan that's a Sheni Lutuma, then the Kohen's going to mistakenly think that he too could eat his Truma on a table that's a Sheni Lutuma. And that's not good, because the Sheni Lutuma is Metami the Truma. Ubeisil Savri Mutter. There's no problem in using a table that's a Sheni. Why? Because Ochli Truma, the Kohenim who are eating the Truma, is Rizimheim. They're very conscientious. We always have a principle that Kohenim is Rizimheim. So the less of a chashash and a, you know, there are fewer shvusim or gzeros that apply to Kohenim. So we don't have to be concerned, says Beis Hillel, that if we permit the use of a sheni, of a table that's a sheni, then the Kohen is going to use the sheni as well for eating truma. He's not going to do that. He'll be very careful to guarantee that the table is not a sheni lutuma. But as far as we are concerned, non-Kohenim, we're allowed to eat from a shulchan that's a sheni lutuma. And if that be the case, then once you permit using the shulchan that's a sheni lutuma, it would convey that tumah to the liquids of the mappa after he washed his hands and dried it in the mappa, and that's not going to be good, because once the liquid on the mappa is a shady, is a rishon l'tumah, it's going to convey tumah over to ochlin that are on the table. You're going to be mitami ochlin. The Gemara says now dover acher. And Basil makes a second point. He says, "Ein netil sidaim lechulin minat Torah." The requirement of netil sidaim is not a biblical requirement, because on the Torah level, we never saw the yadaim as a separate entity that can contract tuma from a rishon. It's part of the entire body of a person, and as such, it can only be makabel tuma from an ava tuma, but not from a rishon l'tuma. And even if they and the person are tame, there's still no tuma doraisa here before eating chulin. So the whole institution of the tils yadayim for chulin is only drabana, because we treat the yadayim as a separate entity. It could contract tuma from a rishon, and therefore we require the tils yadayim to remove any such tuma before we eat the pas, even for chulin. So the Gemara now wants to know, what is the relevancy here of Beis Hillel quoting this halach that ein netil sidayim lechulin min haTorah? My dover acher, hachi kamalu Beis Hillel Beit Shammai. V'chi temru, and if you'll ask me, maishna gabi ochlin dechayshina, why do I say that I'm worried about the mappa on the shulchan, because the liquids on the mappa will be contaminated by the shulchan, because liquids are a kabel tuma from a sheni lutuma. A sheni lutuma is mitami mashkin, it makes into a rishon, and that rishon lutuma, now the liquids on the mappa on the table will now convey tuma to the ochlin. Maishlo gabi yadayim delo chayshinon. Why don't I worry about the liquids in the napkin conveying tuma to the yadayim? So that according to Beis Hillel, what's the difference now between the Shulchan and the Kesses? Why is it Beis Hillel gets very nervous about wiping your hands on this mappa and putting the mappa on the Shulchan? He's not concerned with the cushion, with placing the mappa after you wash your hands on the mappa, you dried your hands on the mappa and the mappa is wet, and placing it down on the Kesses, because the Kesses will not come in contact with the Ochlin. Yeah, but the Kesses will now, if it conveys Tuma into the Mashkin of this mappa, will now he's going to use the mappa, you know, to dry his hands. Let's say he cleans his hands off during the course of the meal, and now by placing this wet napkin on the Kesses, what's going to happen is the liquids on the napkin are going to convey Tuma to Yadayim, which is exactly the reason why Beit Shammai were concerned about putting the wet napkin on the Kesses. But Beis Hillel are only concerned about placing the wet napkin on the table because it's going to transmit Tuma to the Ochlin. They're not concerned about the wet napkin on the Kesses, which will transmit Tuma over to Yadayim. Says Beis Hillel, afilu hachi ha'adifa. In other words, I'm more concerned about Tumas Ochlin than I am about Tumas Yadayim. And why is that? The einetil Yadayim lechulim in Torah. Because as far as the Doraisa is concerned, there's no such thing as shnios l'tuma in the case of Yadayim, that the Yadayim have a status of shnios l'tuma. And therefore, the entire enterprise, the institution of the Tis Yadayim, as far as the Torah is concerned, is irrelevant to Chulin. Is Mutav Shi Tamu Yadayim to Lesle Ikar Midoraisa, Val Yatami Ochlin to Islu Ikar Midoraisa. So now we have two categories that we have to compare in order to appreciate Beis Hillel. Two categories of Tuma Derabbanan. This Tuma Derabbanan, which is Yeshla. Yeshla Iker Midoraisa, and there's Tuma Derabbanan, which is Einla Iker Midoraisa. And that's therein lies the difference between the Shulchan and the Kesses, according to Beis Hillel, between worrying about Tumas Ochlin and worried about Tumas Yadayim. Because in the case of Yadayim, we have no source on a Doraisa level, no basis for Tumas Yadayim. As we said before, on a Doraisa level, you don't isolate the Yadayim and generate Tuma on the Yadayim. Oh, but with regard to Ochlin, Islahu Ikar Minatorah, it has an Ikar. And why is that? Because, according to the Torah law, Ochlin, if they come in contact with a Rishon Lutuma, they become a Sheni Lutuma. That's a Doraisa Halacha. Now, keep in mind, in our case, we're talking about Tuma Derabbanan. Right? The actual Tuma that goes from the table through the liquid on the wet napkin to the food is only Derabbanan. But nevertheless, we're going to be concerned about this because Islei Iker Min HaTorah. In other words, there is such a thing as Ochlin that are Chulin that become a Sheni Lutuma. That's a Tuma Doraisa. So we're dealing with a Tuma Doraisa. And therefore, if the wet napkin, the liquids on the wet napkin on the table become a Rishon Lutuma, again, that's Xerud Derabbanan, but they become a Rishon Lutuma, and they are going to now transmit Tuma over to the Ochlin, which are on the table. Well, there is such a thing as Sheni Lutuma Doraisa. Not in this case, because this case, you know, the table is a Sheni Lutuma, and it's Mitami Mashkin Midrabbanan to make the Mashkin into a Rishon Lutuma. That's all Derabbanan, but the fact that the Ochlin could, in theory, in concept, receive Tuma Doraisa as a Sheni Lutuma, which is what's happening here in Rabbanon, that's recognized by the Torah. That's a valid concern. So there is a breakthrough. There is a source for Tuma of Ochlin on the level of a Sheni Lutuma. Because on a Doraisa level, a Rishon is Mitami a Sheni Lutuma, even though it's Chulin, if it's Ochlin. So now in this Drabanan, which in which case the mashkin become a rishon l'tumah to be metami the ochlin and make it into sheni l'tumah, although it's Drabanan, but islay ikar min haTorah. There are a situation where the Torah recognizes the ochlin as being tmeim b'torah sheni l'tumah. So that Beis Hillel are concerned about the possibility of tumah t'yadayim. For example, if you recall back in the case of pouring a cup of yayin at the beginning of the meal, Beis Hillel were very concerned about the possibility that there might be liquids on his hands if he washes his hands before he touches the cup, and then if he touches the cup, the liquid on the cup could render his yadayim shnios l'tuma, and all that was a concern for Beis Hillel, meaning if his hands are still wet after Netilas Yadayim, then what's going to happen is that when he comes in contact with the kus, and according to Beis Hillel, if you remember, the kus is tameh, the outside, so then the liquids on his hands are going to receive the status of a rishon l'tumah, and they're going to be metami as yadayim. So Beis Hillel certainly was concerned about that, and that's why he prohibited netilas yadayim before the pouring of the kus. But nevertheless, that relative to the other option, you know, it's sort of like the lesser of all evils. Meaning, if he puts the mappa on the shulchan, then we're talking about setting up ochlin as a sheni l'tuma, again all mirabbanan, because of the liquids in the mappa that became a rishon l'tuma mirabbanan, and they could be metame the ochlin to make him into a sheni l'tuma. That's all the rabbanan, but nevertheless, that's the lesser of two evils, because in the case of the keses, what you're talking about is there's no ochlin on the keses, you're only talking about tumas yadayim. That means that the keses, if it has the status of, let's say, a sheni l'tumah, it could convey tumah to the liquids on the mappa. So what? You're still not going to be metame ochlin. Ella, what? You'll be metame mashkin. Basil is, I'm sorry, you're going to be metame yadayim. And Basil is, in fact, in principle, worried about tumas yadayim. He doesn't want yadayim shnios at a table. But nevertheless, that's not as severe of a problem as putting the napkin on the table, because then you have a problem of conveying tumah to the ochlin on the table itself. And now we end up with the final conclusion of this sugya. Now we have to mention here that according to Tosfos, when it says Dover Acher in the Gemara, this another point that's stated in the Braisa, it's not a different reason for Beis Hillel's ruling. You know, it's just explaining Beis Hillel. It's just shedding a light on Beis Hillel to explain why Beis Hillel are more concerned about the Tumas Ochlin on the table than Tumas Yadayim on the Keses. But this is a little bit of a problem, because, generally speaking, you don't find the Lashon of Dover Acher just to enhance, you know, the original shita. Usually Dover Acher presents a whole new approach to the, you know, logic that underlies a certain shita. Tosfos is concerned about the girsi of Dover Acher. Now the next Gemara, I'm just going to mention, you know, sort of superficially, because the next Gemara we're going to cover in tomorrow's shia, and that'll be the second shiur on Daftin Beis Amid Beis, really technically the third shiur, because we started on the top and we ended on the top. That's yesterday's shiur. But be that as it may, we're going to have a machlokas now in the Mishnah about Mechabdin es Habayis. And Beit Shammai wants to get rid of all the leftovers from the meal before you wash your hands. Because if you wash your hands first, then some of the liquids from his hands will be mafsid ochlin. We have an iser; we're not allowed to be mafsid ochlin. and Basil, as we'll soon see tomorrow, they're not concerned about this because they're assuming that the waiter who serves on the table is not an Amoritz. So he'll be very careful, according to Beis Hillel. He's a shtickel Talmud Chacham. He knows the law. He's what we would call a chaver, if you will. And the waiter, as a chaver, is going to be careful and make sure that he's not mafsid ochlin. And the Gemara is going to say that the iser of hefsid ochlin only applies to pirurim that have the shear of a kezayis. And this shamash, this waiter who's a Talmud Chacham, will make sure that he doesn't leave around any pieces that are that size. He'll leave around pirurim that are smaller pirurim, and there's no iser hefsed ochlin with those smaller pirurim. Now, the Gemara is going to quote Rav Yosef. One second. Rav Yosef Bar Chanina, and he's going to say, Ubaha nami halacha kibes Hillel. So what I wanted to point out here is the following. Just one second. The Gemara, after quoting the Braisa of the Machlokes between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai, and about Hefsed Ochlin, which is Beit Shammai's concern about doing my machronim before you clean up the leftover food. So the Gemara adds something to the Braisa. The words are Avol Netilas Yadayim LeBeit Shammai Tchila Lo Svir Lehu. My time Mishum Pirurim. In other words, that Beit Shammai did not advocate or permit the washing of the hands of Mayim Achronim before he clears off the Pirurim, because that would be a problem of Hefsed Ochlin. So I just wanted to point out that the Achronim are troubled by the fact that the Gemara adds something which is just basically a repeat of what we saw in the Braisa. What was the Gemara adding here to the Braisa? And I mention this now because it's very relevant to what we've discussed in the last two shiurim. So it works for Mafreya, so to speak. And we're going to sort of summarize the explanation here of the Rashash. Again, there are many who want to take out this whole line and a half from the Gemara and assume that it's not to be found in the text, the Duke Sof, because it's just a repeat. But the Rashash wants to justify the Girsa as we have it, and that the Gemara is pointing out something very important. And that is that there's a fundamental difference between the Machlokas Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai about the sequence between Kibud and Netilas Mayim Achronim and the previous debates that we had between Beis Hillel Beit Shammai. In the previous debates, we had a min hakotz al hakotz, meaning the two shitas of Beis Hillel Beit Shammai are polar opposites one of the other. There's no addition. It's not like Beis Hillel are adding to Beit Shammai. It's Beis Hillel are disagreeing with Beit Shammai. For example, we had a machlokes over the sequence of Bar Pri HaGofen and the mitzvah of, and the brach of Kedushas Hayom. And according to Beit Shammai, we begin with the Kedushas Hayom and then we recite Bar Pri HaGofen, because the Yom is Gorem, the Bar Pri HaGofen. Beis Hillel, on the other hand, maintained that the Bar Pri HaGofen has to come first. So there's no way of there's no overlap here between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. It's either or. It depends which bracha comes first. According to Beit Shammai, the Kedushas, the Mekadesh HaShabbos comes first, and according to Beis Hillel, the Bar Pri HaGofen comes first. Then we had the machlokas that we discussed in the last year about pouring the cup, whether the Netilas Yadayim should come before he pours the cup, and that's the shita of Beit Shammai, or as Beis Hillel says, no. We shouldn't wash our hands before we pour the cup. On the contrary, he should first pour the cup, and then right before he eats the pas, then he does the Netilas Yadayim. So once again, the two shitas of Beisil Beit Shammai are mutually exclusive. There's no overlap. Now, with regard to the issue of the mappa, once again, we have the same structure that repeats itself. It's an either-or situation, mutually exclusive, because Beit Shammai maintain that the mappa should be placed on the table and not on the keses, not on the cushion, because he's worried about the cushion causing his yadayim again to be tmeos, and he's not worried about the napkin on the shulchan, because he's not going to allow the shulchan to be a sheni. Beis Hillel, on the other hand, says just the opposite, that we have to place the cushion, we have to place the napkin, the wet napkin on the shulchan, on the keses, and not on the shulchan, because he's worried about tumas ochlin, as we discussed at great length. Now we get to the machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel about the sequence of netilas yadayim of mayim achronim and kibud and sweeping up the house, getting rid of the pirurin. And one might be tempted to think that this fourth machlokas in the Mishnah follows the pattern of the previous three, and it's an either-or situation. But that's not true. What the Gemara is trying to stress over here, to emphasize, is that Beit Shammai's reasoning of netilas yadayim tchila, that they want and they insist on mayim achronim first to avoid any possible hefsed of the ochlin, that's not something that that Beis Hillel reject. Beis Hillel will be absolutely fine and comfortable if we postpone the mayim achronim until after he does kibud. Just that Beis Hillel maintained that there's no requirement, there's no need to guarantee that the kibud takes place before the netilas yadayim. I'm talking about mayim achronim, because he's going to rely on the fact that the waiter is a shtickel Talmud Chacham, and therefore he realizes that he's got to make sure that the pirurim of a kezayis are protected. But there's certainly no objection on the part of Beis Hillel to postpone the mayim achronim until after he does the kibbutz. So that's what the Gemara wants to emphasize, that this last machlokas is in contrast to the previous three machlokas, is where Beis Hillel is relieving us of that sequence that Beit Shammai insist, but certainly Beis Hillel would not reject the sequence as Beit Shammai would have it, in which case you do the kibbutz first and the netilas yadayim Mayim Achronim second. So here's where we're ending here on Daf Nun Beis Amid Beis, and we're up to the first of the wide lines on Daf Nun Beis Amid Beis. When I say the wide lines, I mean the middle section of wide lines of Beit Shammai Omri Mechab. That'll be the next year.